Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens. Transform your home with the warmth of an Irish-made kitchen. Cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
Email todaycb at rte.ie.
In the United States, FBI and Secret Service investigators have been revealing further details about Ryan Wesley Routh, the man suspected of trying to assassinate the former President Donald Trump at his Mar-a-Lago resort over the weekend. At a press conference, FBI Special Agent Jeffrey Voltry of the Miami Field Office gave details of Mr. Routh's previous criminal record.
By way of his background, in 2002, as the United States Attorney mentioned, the subject was charged and convicted in North Carolina for possession of a weapon of mass destruction. Law enforcement checks also revealed that from 1997 to 2010, the subject had numerous felony charges for stolen goods. I can also share with you that he was the subject of a previously closed 2019 tip to the FBI where it was alleged he was a felon in possession of a firearm. In following up on the tip, the alleged complainant was interviewed and did not verify, I repeat, did not verify providing the initial information. The FBI passed that information to local law enforcement in Honolulu.
Well, to help explain how investigations like this one are conducted, we're joined now by retired chief of the FBI's training unit, Mike Harrigan. Mike, good morning.
Good morning, Claire. How are you?
Thank you very much for being with us. So let's talk about this because it's in stark contrast to the first attempted assassination attempt on Donald Trump, where the suspect was a young man, almost no online presence. We're getting a very detailed picture of the suspect in this case, aren't we?
We are, Claire. This is much different than the first one. And the fact that he was taken into custody alive and he has such a strong social media footprint gives investigators a lot to help build his background and try to figure out why he did this.
And is that important to understand his motives? Or is it more important to ask, how did someone like this, with all of this weaponry, get so close to former President Trump?
I think both are very important. You know, there's one aspect is the protective envelope, you know, Secret Service's protective operation, how this person got so close, and are there things the Secret Service could do different next time? Clearly, the Secret Service performed admirably in identifying this suspect, firing on him before he could get a shot off with his rifle, which was phenomenal on the part of the Secret Service. But the other side of it is the American people need to know why he did this, and we have to understand what his motivations were, you know, how he came into possession of the weapon. All those things have to be explored and have to be found out. And that gives the Americans a greater sense of peace that this isn't part of a larger conspiracy of a foreign government or a larger organization trying to, you know, influence our electoral process.
Now, you said that, you know, this was handled very well, and indeed it was, in that there was no shot fired by this suspect and he was eventually captured. But many people were shocked that this happened again so soon after the last time that this man managed to get so close to President Trump. Are you surprised at that?
You know, frankly, I am. I am surprised that he was able to get so close to Mr. Trump. I mean, while the Secret Service did a great job in interdicting the threat, questions have to be asked of, you know, how did he get in that position? Now, from what we're hearing is that because of the number of celebrities and others that play on that golf course, that area along those two streets at border where that hole was that he was playing on is commonly frequented by paparazzi, photographers trying to get photos, and they tend to, you know, go into those hedges, go into those bushes, and try to sneak photographs of notable people. So it sounds like almost that the potential here is that it was used, they were used to people going in and out of those bushes trying to get photographs, and that there weren't security measures in place to sweep that area outside the fence to make sure that somebody with ill intent was not secreting themselves along that fence line.
Mm-hmm. And of course, we had the criticisms the last time of the FBI and how the aftermath was dealt with, and the fact that there was no representative there to answer questions in the initial phase. It's very different this time, isn't it?
It is. You know, you see the different law enforcement organizations, the Sheriff's Department, you know, the Secret Service and the FBI, working closely here right out in the open, sharing information as soon as they get it. You know, they have to be somewhat careful in some of the information they share because they want to make sure it's verified, especially when there's the potential that, you know, he could have accomplices. I mean, it seems that it's pretty much off the table at this point, but they still got to be careful not to overshare. But they have to share stuff as quick as they get it. So you see good communication. I think the press is being very fair. They're dialing into it. They're asking hard questions, which need to be asked. I mean, you can't have one person with a firearm change the course of an American election. That's just never good. And that's not good in any country around the world.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, that's serious things are at stake here. So the people have a right to know. And I think you're going to see a lot more transparency on the part of the investigators as this goes forward. Because, you know, the election is only 2 months away. We have to be confident that it's going to be fought out at the ballot box and not at the barrel of a rifle.
Well, there's going to be increased nervousness now around Donald Trump's rallies because we have seen the role that some of those in attendance have played. Like if we look at the incident at the weekend, that there was a witness who took a photograph of this suspect's license plate, which led the other security forces to arrest someone in the aftermath of it. But how do you think this is going to affect Donald Trump's campaign events from here on?
Well, you know, that's a good question. I think what you saw after the Butler incident, you saw increased security. You saw the use of bullet resistant material enveloping him around his podium where he's speaking. So there's those kind of immediate steps were taken. There's been an intensity and an increase in Secret Service staffing and the security footprint around him. This, of course, was during his quote off time. You know, his relaxation time. Personal time. So that's a whole other aspect. Normally, on personal time, things aren't on necessarily on your calendar. It's more, you know, you're going to do something. It's hard for persons to plan an attack sometimes because they don't know where you're going to be. So this individual was either very lucky or he was very well researched and was patient and lying in wait there. But it's going to cause Mr. Trump, I think, to make some hard decisions about how he goes about his time on his personal time.
Well,
it's going to have to.
One thing is sure, Mike, and you can tell us this, your former colleagues are going through unprecedented times, aren't they?
They are. This is. I've talked to several people that I know in the Secret Service, and I can tell you that they're very stressed right now. It's a very tough time for the organization. The last time you had a presidential candidate or actually a president attacked twice in a short period of time was Gerald Ford back in the 1970s. There were two attempts on his life in very close timing together. Of course, on this one, you had a bullet strike the president. That hasn't happened since President Reagan in 1981. So this is causing the organization to feel a lot of stress, a lot of pressure. The agents and the support personnel are working incredible hours around the clock, you know, trying to provide the protection that he needs. So it's a tough time. And normally, as you see in any country's election, the protective forces in any country around a president or a candidate for office mm-hmm. are going to have a lot more hours to work. And it's an intensified, work schedule for them in a lead up to any election. And this goes on around the world.
Mike, it's great to talk to you. Mike Harrigan, retired chief of the FBI's training unit. Coming up next, we're going to be talking about these warnings about the dangers associated with the increase in teenagers addicted to a semi-synthetic but freely available drug.
Text 51551 today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.